Okay, here we go. Episode 6 of the No Name Podcast. I'm Carson Sampson from MBCM, my brother in Church of Manitoba. With me as always is Sarah from MB Mission. Sarah, say hello.
Hello.
And who's with me? Oh, yes, David Thiessen, MB Mission. Say hi to everybody.
Hey, everyone.
So what'd you guys do today? How has it been going so far?
So far, so good.
So far,
David
so
and I
good.
Just got back from a delightful lunch with some of our coworkers at Sabai Thai.
Sabai Thai, my absolute favorite.
Delicious. Coconut, green coconut curry, spice level number 5. I sweated a little bit, but it was nice. Very nice. Cleaned my sinuses right out.
So, you know, guys, you're at a restaurant and we've all gone out to eat and looked across the restaurant and seen couples or friends and whatever.
I have.
Nose deep into their devices, their iPod or iPod. Hello, 2004.
First generation.
Yeah, exactly. No, they're classic. Into their phones. And I bet, you know, if you're honest, and I'll try to be, you've probably done that too. You know, I'll be out to dinner with my wife and the two of us might be engaged in, you know, answering email or texts and stuff. And I mean, it's crazy, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's probably, I'm even behind the times to suggest that this is a new thing because it's been happening forever. So how into your technology, how into your device are you, David Thiessen?
Well, that reminds me, actually, just last night, I had a group of friends over at my house. There's probably 7 or 8 of us sitting in the living room. And I think at least 6.
At least six
of us were actually on our smartphone devices playing with, I think it was Snapchat, taking pictures of one another and sending
it to each other.
To the people in the room and looking at it together. Yeah. So I am sometimes, I admit, guilty of using technology even when I'm face to face with the person that I'm using that technology with. It's kind of ridiculous.
Guilty as charged, but
I mean, as a whole, my friends do tend to make fun of me for being behind the times on social media, Instagram, Facebook, what have you. I don't even have a profile picture on Instagram. I'm told that's a pretty big faux pas these days.
Yeah, if I were you, I probably wouldn't have a profile picture either. But
whoa,
sorry,
shots fired.
You know you're a handsome man. I didn't mean that. Just jealous. Sarah, are you nose deep in your phone most often?
You know what my biggest issue is these days?
No.
Well, lately everyone in our office has taken to playing this word game called Word Bubbles. And we were at a staff meeting the other day, and we're all sitting in my living room. And
your staff meeting's in your living room?
This week it was. We had an all-day staff meeting in my living room. And it was really great. But at one point, like, I am tempted at all moments to just, while we're having this conversation that, like, kind of applies to me, mostly doesn't apply, to just, like, get out this game and find the words. But I really, really tried. I don't think I did. I don't think I did it at any inappropriate times that day. But Carol, my illustrious boss, I looked over at one moment, and she had her finger just hovering over the word bubble icon on her phone, and she saw me looking at her. She stopped. She put it away. She's like, I can't.
Totally
shouldn't do this.
Carol under the bus.
No Name Podcast. She stopped.
She did well. She didn't pull it out at all.
Discipline. Yeah.
But so, it's just a constant temptation. It's just right there on my hip. If ever I'm bored or needing a distraction, it's just such an easy go-to.
So when we're interviewing Mr. David Balzer later this afternoon, will you be playing Word Bubble? Just be honest.
Can you guys handle a little confession?
Oh, boy.
Okay, the last podcast that we did was David interviewing the Trekkers, and I didn't even have a microphone, so I didn't even have access to contribute, so I might have solved 2 levels on Word Bubble.
Okay, it's good having you on the panel. Thanks for joining us.
Lasted a whole 2 episodes. Yeah.
But
wonderful.
I feel a lot of weight off my chest now. So, no, I'm not going to, though. I'm not doing it today. I'm going to be fully invested.
Well, David Balzer is a man who could tell you a lot about the words and the power of words. So maybe he would be your nemesis on Word Bubble. He could probably teach you a few things.
Well, maybe we should have a face-off round if we've got time.
Yeah, part 2 of episode 6, perhaps. Who knows?
Wow.
Maybe for the extra reel. I didn't answer the question. Am I linked and tied to technology?
Indeed.
I mean, I pose
Gramps,
it to you guys.
How are you doing with that?
Yeah, technology for me is, like I mentioned earlier, generation 1 of the iPod. It's white with a click wheel. I can't stop looking at that thing, and I listen to my music. I have Run DMC on there and the Arithmetics and a few others.
But seriously, that scroller wheel, that was state of
the art. I had one of those, okay? So that's just to put it into perspective.
We were watching a movie yesterday, The Darjeeling Limited by Wes Anderson, and they plugged in an iPod Classic, and I looked at it, I was like, man, this movie's so old.
Well, when it first came out, they didn't call it a classic. There was no reason to. Right. I mean, you know, so I'm going to go. Sorry, I'm going to start going by the name Classic.
Okay,
I think.
Off.
Yeah. I don't know, something about it. Maybe I shouldn't. I've taken us off track once again. But yeah, I'm hooked on my device. It's ridiculous. And a lot of times I'll use the excuse many of us will. I use it for work. And I guess I kind of do. But I use it for everything else too. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, is it too late to start with to do a New Year's resolution? But if it isn't, I think that, you know, it'd be a good idea to know the boundaries and put it aside when it's most important to engage with people. But hey, it's a work in progress, just like me. Well, David, it's time to go. Let's talk to David. David's going to talk to David. Let's hear it.
Oh, boy.
Right on. Here we go. David, very glad that you could join us today. It's good to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here, and probably this podcast is going to sound like we're just talking to ourselves the whole time, because you're going to say David, and then I'm going to say David, and then...
That's right, yeah. So. Do you ever do Dave, or is it David all the time?
Interesting that you ask. I haven't... First, there's one network of people that know me as Dave and another that knows me as David, because I went by Dave most of my life, and then at one point I thought I'd try David. Huh. So some people know me that way. So now I have a kind of split personality.
Interesting. I've found, in my circles at least, churches and some friends kind of on the fringes call me Dave, but the professional people and the close friends all call me David. So
wow.
I'm preferring that one personally.
And I have a twin, so then I got another whole identity mixed in there too. So
oh my goodness. Yeah. Just all tied up.
Yeah.
Well, so David, you are the assistant professor of communications and media at CMU. That's right. Can you just tell us a little bit about that role? You do some teaching and some research, right?
Yeah, it's primarily teaching. CMU understands itself as that kind of a university, but we all have research projects that we work on as well. I've only recently moved into that role of, and it gets pretty technical in terms of rank and label, but all that to say, I'm just starting to do research because of the particular kind of role that I have now. So it's about a year and a bit in. Before that, I was strictly a teaching instructor.
Okay, so what kind of courses are you teaching this semester? What do you have going on?
This semester, public speaking, oral communication, which is
nice.
Awesome. I've got like 10 international students in my class.
And wow.
So it's just, it's super fascinating. We talked about just things like... how you address an audience in a culture. We you realize that cultures function very differently in that regard. So I'm doing that one, and I'm doing a new media class. So looking at the web and internet, social media, how does it, and more from a sociological perspective. So when we use these platforms, how does it shape us? Mm. And then I'm doing a radio team. So we're producing interviews, features, 3-4 minute segments that will drop into another program.
Oh, very cool.
So that one puts me in the studio with students.
That would be a lot of fun. I can only imagine too what communication in other cultures would look like. That would be fascinating, even just to have different voices around the table.
Totally. I mean, even just things like in our context, we like to invite students to call us by our first names.
Mm.
And that's a certain kind of cultural reality of warmth and informality. That is kind of, you know, if you really want to be connected, then you offer your first name. Whereas in other communities, and I have African students, and they actually ask if they can call me by my last name because they just can't imagine calling somebody who's older than them by their first name.
How interesting, yeah.
So we have to talk through that first just to be able to have a conversation in class.
Yeah, that's defining the terms of the class even. That's interesting. Yeah. And I mean, that's the subject matter you're talking about too, the communications. Yeah. So you mentioned research too. So what are some of the projects you've been working on lately?
Well, it's one. And okay. I keep working at it all the time when I can. So mostly that happens in the spring and summer when I'm during the term. I'm just... have lots of teaching and administrative responsibility. So it's the Oh My God project is the one that I'm working on, which is exploring the use of "Oh my God" in everyday conversation. And the way I've chosen to work at that in terms of output, I guess you would call it, is to use film as a medium to express my findings. So I just finished a 10-minute short film called "When Was the Last Time You Said, Oh My God?" We figured we'd call it what we ask in the film. So
simple,
really creative title, right? Like, yeah. Let's just call it what we do in the film. So that put me out on the street and exploring people's use of the phrase.
Interesting. I mean, it's funny, even when you said the project is, "Oh my God," see, I grew up in a Christian family, and so saying that phrase was forbidden, right? So even hearing you say that, I'm like, oh man, what are constituents going to think? We're saying, "Oh my God," over the radio. But it just goes to show people use it quite differently, I imagine, right?
Yeah, and part of my curiosity is exactly what you just described. And there's two layers to the project for me. One is exploring the phrase and seeing how it's understood culturally and what it tells us about our world, and then the other one is to consider how the phrase is used in scripture, which it's used a lot, very like a direct translation. Psalm 71 is where "Oh my God" is found a number of times, and many other psalms in particular. And so one of my curiosities is to say, have we actually given the phrase away, so to speak, as a Christian community? And what would happen if we would revisit it and maybe, dare I say, redeem it in some ways?
Interesting. So about how far back then did it start being used in more like secular environments?
Well, some people, some of the work I've done, I need to do more on that particular piece of this project, but going back to the late 1800s would be kind of one of the reference points in some, actually out of the, some correspondence with the British Parliament and some use of the phrase there. But it really is a, it's really hard to track down the history. I interviewed a sociolinguist, somebody who studies language from the University of Toronto, and she pins a lot of these kinds of expressions to California and certain movements there. So the idea of where language and expressions get formed and then get passed into the culture. But she definitely says that it's teenage young women that tend to define these kinds of expressions for us.
Is that right?
The ones we call intensifiers, emotional, if I'm not talking about the biblical use, but just the cultural use. There seems to be a wellspring of phrases coming out of that demographic that does actually impact culture.
Interesting. So, teenage girls, you said.
That's what she said. I had read it in one of her studies, and when I interviewed her, I said, "Now you're not actually going to agree with, like, are you actually saying this?" And she said, "Yes, I am." I'm like, "You've got to be kidding me, right?" But she studies language. She just, you know, grabs interviews of people speaking and then does an analysis of it.
Yeah.
And there's these patterns that emerge. Anyway.
That's interesting. I wouldn't normally have thought of that demographic as being the ones kind of being on the cutting edge of how language is used and shaped.
Particular kinds of language. So the emotional intensifier.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The expressions that we use to accent things, which is one version of the "Oh my God" use in culture.
Yeah.
It's a punctuation.
I'm curious, do you use the phrase yourself?
That's a good question. Very little. Although now that I'm immersed in it, in terms of trying to understand it, I actually have been using it. I don't know how often I would say it out loud, but I use it as a way of expressing myself as, more as a direct thought or statement. And particularly because of the biblical research I've done on it.
Okay. So I'd love to hear more about the people who you got to meet as a result of this project. Like, what kind of stories came out of this?
So I did a couple pilot projects. So we were basically, if you can imagine, the way the film content emerged was we'd go out for a weekend, pick some sites in Winnipeg or around the city. And I also did a weekend in Toronto. So you kind of go out there and say, okay, we're going to go grab interviews. So it's the people I met on those weekends that are kind of the most immediate.
And are these just people on the streets, or did you set up appointments at all?
These are people on the street. So in Winnipeg, we had a couple sites. We basically picked a site and then went to go. So for instance, the first time I ever asked somebody the question of when was the last time you said, oh my God, I was at University of Manitoba in a restaurant having a meeting, and we were imagining an event, and this phrase came up as maybe being something that could help us plan the event. So I turned to the young adults beside me, and I asked the guy, just turned around and asked him, when was the last time you said, oh my God?
A stranger.
Stranger. But I thought, I'm going to try out the idea. If we're going to use this for this other stuff we were planning, would this have some kind of intrigue for the people? So I asked him the question. And he said, oh, yeah, I used it this morning. I said, oh, really? Where were you? He said, I was standing in front of the mirror looking at myself. And I said, oh, my God. And the girl next to him looks at him. And I said, oh, no, here's the really important question. Was that a good thing or a bad thing? Because that phrase could go either way, right?
Yeah, it can go
either
way.
He said, no. When I look in the mirror and I say, oh, my God, that's a good thing. Mm. And the girl then almost fell off her chair, right? Like, this guy is so bold to be able to. And then I added my little twist, which almost made him fall off his chair, is I said, so you really like what God's done with your body, huh? He didn't see that coming.
No, I guess. Yikes.
So then they ended up talking about it in their circle. There were about eight of them sitting there having lunch together. So they just started talking. They're like, oh, yeah, like, what did you say? Oh, my God. So I went back to my meeting. I said, I think this might work. Like, there's something here that might have some play. So that was the first time. So we went there. We went to the legislature, found a wedding party there. We negotiated, got to know the wedding party, and I just thought it would be so cool to interview a bride and groom a couple hours before their ceremony. So we actually ended up being able to interview them, and so it was super fascinating because they ended up telling us, she said, oh my God, that morning when she was getting ready for the wedding. Hmm. And then the groom, I said, so when do you say, oh my God? And he says, well, I actually don't use it because I think it's sacrilegious. So can you imagine what I just generated right there
the day
two
of.
Hours before the wedding? So I actually apologized. I said, I am sorry. I didn't see that coming. I'm sorry. I probably made your day more complicated than you wanted. So then they ended up negotiating, okay, well, does it have a connection to who God is? Does it not? And how? Why would that matter? Hmm. So every conversation on the street is just so fascinating, and because it does seem to take people to places of the extremes in their lives. So incredible delight or incredible despair. Hmm. We interviewed, there was a missing and murdered women camp out happening at the ledge when we were there. So I got to do an interview with one of the First Nations leaders who was in the camp out. And that was just gut-wrenching because he described people yelling out of a car window going by, hey, you bleepity bleep bleep. I wouldn't even give you all the language that he was telling me, but he said, people call out the window, hey, you this, oh my God, why don't you go get a job?
Ooh.
Okay, now just imagine how the phrase is used and how it feels in that context. So that's the story he told me when I asked him, when was the last time you said, oh my God, he told me his story, and he said, yeah, but these people who drive by, they're using it. And then he adds this comment, he says, I think people maybe, it might be good to think about what you say when you say it. And it's just like this. Yeah, so for me personally, to be out there getting some of these, encountering these people, somehow this, like that's just a profound moment, right? You just take so much away from how much truth can be spoken in a phrase, in a soundbite almost.
And it's amazing how something that started as a exclamation of praise can degenerate to something that's so harmful for people.
Right.
That just demonstrates the range of this three words on its own.
So part of the reality is what this project is demonstrating, at least on one level, is that language has this incredible flexibility and capacity to be a number of things because of our inflection, our tone. And for me, what I'm exploring is that there's this pattern of stories that I'm collecting that seem to not be either the taboo, like just the sacrilegious, you know, flippant comment. People who use it that way aren't thinking of it as taboo, but just kind of saying it.
Yeah.
And there's also stuff where people aren't they're not just using it as a curse. There's something in between. And my hunch is that maybe, like, when somebody tells me a story of some kind of a tragic event, and they said, and I said, oh my God, when I was with that person, they're not using it sacrilegiously, and they're not using it flippantly either. So what's going on in that space? And my working kind of curiosity is that, are we actually, could it be that people are praying in some way? Like, are they actually calling out to God, even if they totally are aware of it or not? But they're just saying, I really, God, where are you? So my hope is to collect some of these stories, collect some of what I've been describing, or investigate it, and then offer the short film is just the when do you say it. It's kind of a fun but compelling moments. And then the bigger project that I'm hoping in the next couple of years to develop would be more of a documentary style to investigate some of these questions, and all with the hope of provoking and prompting people to, if their head kind of flips back after they've watched the film the next time they hear it, because they have a new thought about the phrase, then I feel like my research I've achieved something.
You also mentioned the interest whether Christians can take back the phrase somehow. Mm-hmm. Can you say a little more about that? What would that look like?
Well, there's been a few times when I explore some of this content in various church settings, or even way back. I mean, I did a couple days at MBCI in schools. And so I'm exploring, like, could we say the phrase and hear the Psalms when we say it, even when we say it in the everyday? So that's, I guess, what I mean by, like, so I pose that question to myself. Like, would I say, oh my God, out loud in a way that captures the essence of what the psalmist is doing, as a kind of a quick prayer or a quick exclamation that actually, when people hear me say it, they don't just think sacrilege or intensifier or nothing.
Yeah.
And could Christians say, oh my God, perhaps? And I'm not saying, okay, you got to go say this again. But because you can hear it and say it in so many different ways, what if people actually use it in a way that, like, I met a woman who used it in a way where I said, she said, I tripped. And I said, oh my God. I said, oh really? I said, so was it useful to you? She said, well, yeah, of course it was, because when you ask him, he's there to help you. And I could hear kind of in the way she said it that it didn't feel the same as the other people I'd met. And that's why I asked her the follow-up question. And I thought, okay, that's very interesting, because in the way she said it, she was actually honoring the living God. Like, you actually could feel it just in the way she said it. It seemed that way.
Yeah, because as for Christians, those who confess that God is present anyhow, to have this phrase be a reminder of God's presence, or to direct attention to God, I can see how that would be more useful, as you put it, than just tossing the phrase away.
Yeah, and not to say that we all got to go start saying, oh my God,
right.
But I think the other side of redeeming it may be that when you hear people saying it, maybe listen again, because we have these ways of hearing it that don't typically, like, you don't typically ask, oh, I think maybe they're calling out to God. We just hear it as flippant.
Yeah. Oh, that's fascinating. So
there you have it, my best shot at kind of what I'm playing with, you know. Is there something there? We'll see.
Yeah. So you mentioned the short film is prepared already.
It is.
How can we get access to that?
Right now I'm trying to, the quick version is come and I'll show it to you. I haven't put it on the web yet, just because I want to get it to some film festivals.
Oh, yeah.
And once I put it on the, I'm happy to get it out there, but once I put it on the web, then you can't submit it to film festivals anymore. It's just a distribution thing that film festivals do. So I'm hanging on to it a little bit. So I'm planning, we've designed a youth event around it, so I'm just getting the word out to say, hey, I'd be happy to come and share some of this stuff with, in that context. So to do kind of screening events. My desire is to have the film create a conversation.
Another project that you're working on right now is this Going Barefoot Conference. Could you tell us a little bit of what that's like and what's new with that this year?
Yeah, it's March 11th, Friday. It's a one-day professional development for anyone interested in communications. It's really designed to resource storytellers and marketing people. Now you may say, okay, so we're talking in a church context. How does that make sense? My growing conviction is that the church is as much about public communication as anybody else. We may not imagine that, but we actually are always putting something out there externally, formally or informally. So this is a day of a couple keynote speakers and then workshops. Each year, it's every couple years we've done it. This year we're looking at one of our guests is a sociologist from Ambrose University in Calgary, and he's looking at what's the shape of faith in Canada, which is basically from my vantage point, like audience analysis. So
okay.
How do I understand what's going to land and where? And so he's looking at trends around that. And then we have workshops in how do I put a communications plan together if I'm working with donors? How do I do some good strategy around that? We have a media, multimedia storytelling workshop. How do I take a story and a really fine storyteller from MCC is going to be resourcing that. So I could see churches who are doing various kinds of video clips or audio or to have a workshop with somebody like Megan would just really resource your creative team.
Oh, totally.
And then we have some panels. A really interesting one that I think is really relevant for churches is we have kind of the who's who of some of the big local broadcasters coming in, the Winnipeg Free Press, CTV, others, and it's a media panel. If I want to relate to the existing distribution channels, get my story out there, what are you looking for? How do you do that? So, I mean, our church, the one that I go to, we interfaced with the media all of a sudden on some social issues, and all of a sudden you got to know how to relate to the press.
Yeah, and understand, too, how communication is heard and said differently, whether you're in church culture or not. I mean, we were just talking about that, how people hear from even the most basic phrases quite differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we have, at the end of the day, we have Trudy Schrader coming from, she's the executive director of the Winnipeg Symphony. And you might say, okay, what's the connection there? Well, she's looking at how to take an organization and a mission that most people think is irrelevant and no longer necessary and to make it thrive. So she's just like there to help us. And she's got some really interesting ways that she has reconnected the symphony to the community. And she says that making art together actually creates a healthy society. But in tough economic times, you don't invest in that way necessarily. So I just think it's great for churches, NGOs who may say, yeah, we could be out there more, or how do we end up thriving? How do we develop our organization? I think her experience from the symphony could have something to inspire you with. So
that's such an interesting idea, though, having the church learning from the symphony. I wouldn't have thought of that, but that, there's a lot there.
Clearly. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one who sees the connection, but
I mean, I'm intrigued. So the way that churches have been using communications and technology has been changing quite a bit lately. I mean, you mentioned doing media consultations, talking to the media to get stories out, engage social issues and so on. But we also have things like Facebook and Instagram accounts with our church, whole positions hired around communications and media people. So just in your opinion, what are some of the consequences of integrating more technology in?
What are the consequences of integrating technology? More work and more complexity.
Yeah.
People ask me, and I'm old enough to remember kind of another era before the internet, and people say, so is it more complicated now than it used to be to communicate with your congregation and with an audience? And my quick answer is yes. And it's not, you know, you can figure this out quite quickly, that when you have the opportunity to connect with more people, to break the challenge of spanning geographical space, right? So I can I have access. So we have that potential, and that's the opportunity of these platforms. But at the same time, you have this incredible fragmentation of the audience, because these platforms are designed around people and their interests. It's not designed around kind of a common gateway. So imagine how many different things people are interested in your congregation, and then you'll know how many platforms they're using. And then you, as an individual leadership team, you're trying to just say one thing to these people, but you're using a medium that's locked into their interests. So that's just super complicated, because you don't really have the confidence of talking to everybody. So previous to this, you know, I call it mini to mini, the network of the internet is that everyone can talk to everybody, whereas we came from a world that was one to many. And that's the only way you could actually get your message out. You know, if the radio station or the TV station or the paper carried your story, that was the way that got out there. But now on the web, it's a network. It's a true, very layered network. So there's opportunity there in terms of potentially getting in touch with more people than that one paper or that one radio station.
Right.
But a lot harder to assess who am I actually connecting with, and did they get the message? And most of our platforms, the Facebooks, Twitters of the world, they're all driven off of algorithms, and they're sifting the messaging based on their interests, and you have no control over that. So not only are you using something that's networked, but somebody else is kind of the gatekeeper on what messages get to which people based on the filters that are set on the back end.
And those filters often do have to do with personalized interest, right?
Yeah.
So I'm hearing what I want to hear through my personal device. Yeah.
If you have 250 to 300 friends on Facebook, then the math on that is that in one day you would have 1,500 posts in your newsfeed. Well, it's inconceivable for you to scan 1,500 messages in one day. So there's just a natural demand by the nature of what we've created that something is going to get filtered. I think the potential of some of these platforms in the church is that you can, it's the clusters in my mind. It's not the mini, it's the clusters where you can draw people together and have a much stronger relational experience together. But it's going to be that 8, 10, 20, maybe 30 people in a Facebook group or something where you have a sense of confidence of who's getting your message.
Right, yeah.
It's not the general kind of put this out on Facebook and then my congregation's going to know. They won't, actually.
I'm curious, too. I mean, theologically speaking, you're including more people in the communications that the church is doing, but it also seems the way you're putting it that you're having more and more subgroups getting together. So maybe this is too big of a generalization to make, but does social media platforms, do you think they're promoting greater unity in the church or more fragmentation?
I just wrote a piece for the NB Herald, so I've got that running in my head, which will come out later. But what I said there, and I think this might be a I said I have a strong incarnational bias in my view of technology. And what I mean by that is I have a strong interest and preference for face-to-face and embodied presence. Mm. So rather than answering your question directly, I would say for people who are wanting to use social media kinds of things, why are you doing it? Mm. What's your goal? Do you know why you're using it? And that's not intended to sound really pessimistic about it, but I'm not sure we always know why we're choosing a Facebook over calling people together. You're going to know that there is fragmentation if you use that platform. You just, that's the way it's designed. I mean, the algorithms and the way that you get your news feed, and I hear this from so many of my students. They say, during the political campaign that we just went through in Canada, said I stopped going to my Facebook feed for anything there because it's an echo chamber. The algorithm tells me, only exposes me to people who agree with what I already think. So if I want to have a conversation, a creative conversation, it's not going to happen there. You know, if the church is using these mediums and you're just clustering people together who are the same, I mean, there's value in some of that, but it has a really hard time bridging into across things, across groups.
Hmm. You mentioned this MB Herald article that you've written. Can you just tell us a bit of what that was about?
I was asked to think out loud about if somebody's wanting to think about communication and even a communication strategy or plan in the church, or if I could say something to the church about their use of technology, what would I say? So I make some comments about what questions would you ask yourself if you're going to harness a new technology? Mm. And how do I see that playing out? This particular, I did two. So this one is more focused on a conversation about how the form of what we do speaks as loudly as the content inside the form. And people who are familiar with Marshall McLuhan and his medium is the message.
Yeah.
I basically unpack that for the church.
Okay.
So I'm more and more convinced that the environments we create with the technology, and I include chairs and light and stage and windows as technology, along with the microphones and all of that.
Right, electronic or not.
Yeah. So that all of that actually says something to you about what it means to be in relationship with God before anyone says anything at the front. And I'm curious, what I'm asking people to consider is how big of an impact do you think that has? And I'm saying my argument is pretty big. So that's why I end up thinking about John 1:14, and I unabashedly actually think theologically we should go there to say, what is the priority of Scripture? Now you'd say, well, Jesus didn't have Facebook, so how can you use that? No, but the incarnation is bigger. It's not a technology. It was a choice that God made to be present, to move in. So I think we can learn from that, regardless of what era we're in. He chose a certain way of coming, and it was full embodied presence.
Hmm.
So I would risk a theological statement to say that's more than just an example or a good idea. That's actually the very creator of the universe coming. So can we learn something about what we could be with each other through that? So I'm pretty biased that way.
Yeah, no, it's good.
I'm John 1:14 biased.
I like it. I like it. So that'll be out in the Herald forthcoming.
In spring.
Yeah. Okay. And we're looking toward that short film too. For more about this Going Barefoot conference, how can we get more information on that? The when, the where?
Yeah, the easiest, it's March 11. The easiest is to go cmu.ca/goingbarefoot. Or just search Going Barefoot CMU and you'll Google it. You'll be there on the page.
Very good. And this isn't just for those communications department
people.
No,
it's really wide open. Anyone who, I see it as a great resource for any kind of lay leaders, anyone who's curious about storytelling and making plans around that.
So pastors as well then?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, see, the thing is we tell pastors that they should know something about everything. That's why I'm hesitating.
Yeah, it's fair. Like,
yes, the pastor should know that. Yes, you should know the other. But I really think if you think about how are you crafting your, like you're putting together websites, you're putting together public events, you're putting together vignettes on your website. We're creating this stuff. So this is a day where you can think strategically about that.
Well, I feel like we could talk for hours more. I'm very curious about more of these things, but probably draw it there. Thank you for coming with us, David. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been great to be here. Thanks so much.